I had the opportunity to speak with Jason Davis with Lane County Public Health the other day, and I just want to note that our case count for Florence is now at 111. When I spoke to him on Monday evening, that case count was at 103. Jason, a lot of interest has been piqued around here in the last couple of weeks. We've had over 30 cases total. Can you give us a little, how concerned should we be about this right now?
I think you are right to be concerned. And I think that looking at the public health sense of what's going on out there, it's multifaceted and it mirrors what we saw. At least this is what I'm getting from our epidemiologist and our chief health officer. We had a conversation about the coast this last week and mirrors what the metro area saw back in about June. And so what happened in June in the metro area is that we had done a pretty good job of containing the virus to some degree, really looking at our social gatherings. By and large, our adults were not having social gatherings. College was still in session, so we didn't have a lot of social gatherings around the college. Most businesses were pretty curtailed. And so in terms of a public health position, it was a pretty good place to be in. And then things changed. And what changed was the good weather in those summer months. Now, obviously, that's not necessarily the case out in the coast right now, but you are similar in terms of your case trajectory. You're starting off with this initial boom, and you're at the sort of turning point where, you know, individual actions can really make a huge impact in turning those case numbers around. And it's not too late. As you mentioned, there's been about 30 or so new cases within the last a couple weeks there, a week and a half. And last time I checked, you were upwards of 80 plus cases overall for the zip code there in Florence. You're still absolutely in a position where you can curtail these case numbers. What it really boils down to, though, is sort of a public willingness to do so. And what you're seeing now is somewhat unique. And that's kind of the problem, I think, that many areas in the nation and the state and even within Lane County are seeing, is that you have very divided factions of individuals in terms of their willingness to participate in the overall slowing of case spread. You have some people who understand the threat, they understand what's going on, and yet they say, you know, this is not going away anytime soon. We just need to go around about business as usual. We have people who completely call into question the entire outbreak and say that this is all a hoax and I'm just going to go about business as usual. And then we have folks who are very adamant about trying to slow the curve and trying to do everything they can personally to do so, and everybody in between. And so that's a very different landscape than we saw back in the spring. And so in some ways, I think there's a lot of hope for you. In other ways, ideologically speaking, it's going to be a real big challenge. Because in order for you to keep these cases from really seeing triple-digit numbers and creeping their way into some of your most at-risk populations, there has to be that sort of public willingness to join together. And that's got to come from private sector businesses. It's got to come from public agencies. It's got to come from everybody has to be playing together. And that's what we've noticed, because the metro areas and the rest of Lane County are experiencing case booms like never before. And the consensus amongst our people is that the reason for that is really COVID fatigue. It's people just starting to their guard down and go about their activities as if nothing was happening. There in Florence, you had a Bible study recently. Obviously, an activity that really doesn't have anything wrong with it. People do this all the time and on a blue sky day. And for a lot of people, it's religious enrichment and it's good for their soul. And yet it still caused a pretty significant problem for those involved. And we saw people hospitalized as a result of that. Now, thankfully, that individual instance did not result in large-scale spread. What is really accounting for your spread right now is household transmission and public transmission via everyday encounters with your friends, with your neighbors, at local businesses, at local gathering places. We're also seeing an increase in religious activities in general. So not just the Bible study, but you know those congregations that are continuing to meet and those activities that are continuing on. Now, we at Public Health obviously understand that people need an outlet. They need to be able to pursue life to some degree and not just be shut up in their home. But I think the harm reduction message in all of this is that if you're tired of COVID, if you're tired of everything that's going on, you're tired of not seeing your family, your friends, or going to your Bible study or whatever it is, going to your favorite restaurant, and you're making that personal choice that at the moment you're not going to get a lot of blowback from government per se, please do, at the very least, please do pursue those activities in the most responsible, healthful way. You know, this time of year, January, we're right in the middle of flu season. So on any other year, if it's 2014, 17, 18, 19, any other year, we would be cautioning folks to really try to cover your cough and sneeze, to make sure you dispose of your tissues, and to not gather in closed spaces, especially if you're in an at-risk category. That mirrors a lot of what we're saying about COVID. And we would just really encourage folks to try and be diligent about preserving your own health and those around you. Even if COVID presents sort of an ideological challenge for you, do so in the spirit of trying to remain healthy and trying to encourage health amongst those closest to you.
One of the things I noticed, and you mentioned triple digits, we did in fact have 17 new cases since New Year's Eve that showed up, which we are now at 103. Do you have any indication of what that last 15 of them were in one day? They were from New Year's Day to the Saturday that came in there. And I was curious, we were kind of looking to see if maybe you had an answer on that particular outbreak there.
So what I got back from our EPI team is that the majority of your new cases really are being linked to household transmission. And to push it out beyond that is difficult given the number of your cases, just because you have so few still. And I know that triple digits for you now very much seems like a worst case scenario. And that, you know, given the size of your community, I believe your area code, there's around 14,000 people. So case per 100,000, you're definitely starting to get up there. But when you look at the way we work in epidemiology to try to trace these cases back, with those few numbers, it's really hard to assign outbreaks. It's hard to come up with these sort of commonalities. I think we were very fortunate to find that last sort of social gathering in the way of the Bible study that I talked about previously. It's been more difficult recently for us to really trace back some of these cases. And what we're seeing is two or three cases here in one household, two or three cases over here, and those households don't know each other, which is hard to believe in a small community like yours. But at the very least, they're not having any contact with each other. So that means for us, at least at the very tertiary sort of initial level, that transmission is happening just generally in the community without it being tied to a specific event or activity. And that's troublesome. That means that it's in the air, so to speak, and that we have folks out there who are going about their daily lives and transmitting it unknowingly. So that's really where we're seeing the majority of the transmission happen, is it, what I've been told anyways, in terms of our case investigation. Now, it is important to realize, though, that we are a little bit behind on our case investigation, and there's no sugarcoating it. We've been inundated, and with upwards of anywhere between 80 to 150 cases a day, it's really been a challenge to stay on top of being able to trace back all those different components and make solid connections. And we don't want to make connections that are not accurate, that are not really drilling down to the root cause. I think we can expect to have more information in coming days. However, this sort of initial push right after all the holidays, most of our transmission, I think, is coming from those family gatherings that happened from the beginning of the holidays until now. And that's what I've been told by our EPI team as well.
When I look at these numbers, though, I mean, incrementally, they could compound very quickly. And we've got some businesses, like we have a couple restaurants in town that said, we're going to open because we need to make money. And then the people that gather there, in fact, one group I heard from my coworker said they were calling themselves Patriots, you know, because they were in there unmasked and having dinner. That kind of concerns me. And I think it should concern everybody. I mean, I obviously understand you're not a governing agency when it comes to law enforcement, but what kind of things is the county looking at to try to get us over this COVID fatigue? How do we get out of that?
Well, one of the ways that we get out of it is you, George, the media. You are vital to our efforts in really communicating the truth to people and really having a science basis to everything that we look at. One of the problems that we're encountering is not necessarily that folks don't see the good or the utility in the guidance or the restrictions. It's really deeper than that. It's that they have a disagreement with the level of severity that COVID presents. They don't fundamentally or ideologically agree that we should be taking the measures that we are for COVID. And so in order to combat that, you actually have to go down to some really deep-seated beliefs and views that people have that are sort of morphing into COVID. You know, public health is a nonpartisan, science-based organization that is purely and solely looking at promoting the health of individuals and communities. We have absolutely no tie to any party, to any elected official other than our Lane County Board of Commissioners, who as you are aware, they get elected in and are not part of any political party. So, you know, combating that is super difficult. What we have to do is use trusted sources like your media there on the coast, and like our faith leaders, even like our business community members, and certainly our government officials, like your city manager there in Florence and whatnot, to communicate to folks to underscore how bad it can be for a community like Florence. You have a population that skews towards our elder community, people who are 65 plus, which has been identified as a group that is severely affected by COVID. And with that comes a whole host of other pre-existing conditions that are typically present in that age group. If that were to make its way through the population in a pronounced way, your hospital out there could be absolutely inundated and overwhelmed, and people can lose their life. That's a lot for any one individual to sort of wrap their heads around and to start making decisions for everyone else. And that's really what I think needs to be driven home for folks, is when you choose not to mask, and when you choose to sort of disregard the science-based recommendations from public health, then you're doing a few things. One, you're effectively saying that you yourself have more experience and have a greater base of knowledge to draw from than the experts who have been doing this the majority of their life. And I don't want to be confrontational with people, but that's really what, in effect, you're doing. Even though you might not intentionally be doing that, or you might not sit down at a dinner table and pin this out, but that's what you're going to do. Effectively, that's what you are doing. And secondly, what you're doing is you're taking the lives of those community members around you into your hands. You're risking their lives. And that's something that I think that we are very critical of in our society. The way we treat people who have killed someone from drunk driving shows just how serious we are about negligence when it comes to deciding the fate of another human being. And that's really what you're doing when you do those things that seem innocuous. They seem like they're very simple or inane when you don't wear your mask or you choose to go to a restaurant. But really, honestly, it's pretty consequential. And it's really not in any one community member's sort of bailiwick to make those decisions. It's not our place. Public health is charged with preserving life. And the things that we're telling you to hopefully do and to participate in are aimed at preserving life. They're not aimed at getting anybody elected. They're not aimed at trying to demolish our capitalist society or put our businesses under. They're aimed at preserving life, and that's it. At the same time, we have a whole host of individuals who are trying to preserve those businesses and trying to keep up the well-being of people. And it's been rough. I know there's a lot of businesses who just haven't gotten enough support. They haven't gotten enough help. And that is horribly unfortunate, but nevertheless, that does not mean that we should risk human life to maintain that financial situation. What we need to do is we need to make it socially unacceptable to make those decisions as an individual, and we need to make it socially acceptable to figure out ways to support our businesses, to rally around those who aren't doing well financially, and to come through this in a way that when all is said and done, we look back and we say, that is what a community is all about. It's about rallying together and finding solutions that both preserve life and preserve your ability to make a living. And honestly, we can do that. It takes creative thinking, and it takes endurance, and it takes vigilance, and it's tough. And I know that I'm not in a position to speak to everybody's condition, but I got to believe that we can get there.
Well, I think one of the things that we noticed here is like we have a cinema here that had to close. The cinema did everything they could to try to stay open. They did, you know, they even remodeled the inside. When it came down to it, they couldn't open. They went on a GoFundMe page. They asked for a certain amount. Within a couple hours of having that, they already had a huge fund. It's been a month and a half now. They've got almost every penny that they had asked for. So the community is giving, and I think maybe some people that decide to open their restaurant early or something like that don't necessarily think, well, maybe I could go out there and just, hey, ask for help, because there's people that would be willing to help. But then you've got the other side of it where, I know it's a meme, so I don't put 100% credibility in it, but you see this picture of the airport, and you see people 6 feet apart in the airport, and then they show them inside the airplane where, you know, there's every other person is taking up a seat and they're not 6 feet apart anymore. So people are like confused about the messages they're getting. They get a strong message from Lane County Public Health, from Oregon Health Authority, but then the business sector goes out there and says, hey, come fly with us. And it's really confusing. Right. And that's where I think where the conspiracy comes in and where the questioning comes in.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's hard. It's much easier in your scenario there to deal with, let's say, someone who wants to inflict harm on the airplane, terrorist, if you will. That's a person that we can see. We can watch them on the news. We can assign blame to that person or the organization that they represent. But with COVID, it's an unseen enemy. There's no one really to attach our anger or our disappointment to. It's even harder for the businesses whose bottom line is at stake when they can't see the culprit that they're fighting against. And we've seen that from the very onset of the pandemic. Look, this virus needs people to survive. And within that, you're going to see regulations that are aiming to try to create space and to try to decrease contacts, just purely by virtue of trying to eliminate transmission through the known ways that we know that the virus transmits. Now, is that going to be perfect? And is that going to look the same for every organization that is presented with these recommendations? Absolutely not. If I tell you to do one thing, I tell another person to do the same thing, we're going to get two different outcomes because we're human and we make mistakes. And there's nth degree of variability in everything that we do. And that's what we're seeing with COVID. I think people expect this to work perfectly like a well-oiled machine. And there's two reasons why it's not. One is what I just said, we're human. And to throw out broad-reaching, vague recommendations to communities and to individuals who have not felt like public health has had a presence in their lives up until now, you're not going to get the same sort of like congruent and consistent messaging or actions by agencies, by businesses, by individuals, as you would with, let's say, law enforcement. If people say, you know, take part in a community watch and try to prevent robberies in your community, we are used to understanding what that means and the implications to you personally and the implications to your community and how to combat that. But public health has been put in the back seat and sometimes even dropped out of the car. Public health is what got us here, to be honest. Vaccinations, clean drinking water, occupational health, all these things are what has made our country as stable and as predictable and as financially viable as what we've enjoyed. But the problem with any sort of success is that once you achieve that, you start to forget about what got you there. You know, right. You start to forget about the progress and what the underpinnings of that progress were. And so now here we are in 2020, and we've achieved this great notoriety and position in the world, largely as a result of public health, but we haven't had large-scale outbreaks. We haven't had poisoned drinking water. If we have food contamination, there's a press release that goes out. The product is recalled. Maybe five people get sick, but it's thwarted. And people have just kind of taken for granted all the unseen threats that we have within this world, the viruses, the bacteria, everything else that public health works to protect you against. And now for the first time potentially in their adult life, they're confronted with being asked to contribute to that public health effort. Up until now, all they've had to do is get a few shots, apply for a restaurant inspection, and that's their public health involvement. People right. who were alive in the 40s and 50s, they know what public health means.
Right. It's like the uncle that sends you a $5 on your birthday every year. And then when you're 15, he decides to show up instead. And you know he's been helping you all along. Right. But you're not really sure who he is when he's there at your front door.
Exactly.
I'm sure you've probably looked at it in some respect. I don't know how much information you have on it, but we're looking at the flu map, for example, for this year for Oregon, even across the United States. It's green. It's very low. And I know that COVID's a little bit more contagious, they say. But if we're this successful in keeping the flu down, why do you feel, based on the science, we're having such a huge increase in COVID-19? If the preventions are similar?
I think that is an absolute excellent question, and it shows your curiosity, George. And I think that what it really boils down to is molecular biology. So COVID compared to the flu virus, if you looked at the two viruses under a microscope, they would probably appear somewhat similar. However, COVID is much, much smaller. There's a few different reasons why it's more communicable, but that is the number one reason why COVID is more communicable and can make its way into places where the flu can't. If you imagine a water molecule, a microscopic water molecule, I'm not talking about the ones that run down your shower when you're taking a shower, but the ones that are a micron across, just a very, very tiny, tiny bit of water in the air, and it's able to actually be suspended in the air, that water droplet has to be relatively large for the flu to be suspended in it. If a water molecule is too small and you have even the virus the size of the flu inside of it, the water molecule falls, and it falls at a rate that's faster than it would naturally fall. Eventually, all water molecules fall. But with COVID, because it is so much smaller, that water molecule can stay in the air much longer. Additionally, because of the size of COVID, it can also be carried through air currents that can actually cause it to move several feet. So our recommendations really are inadequate. They're a great first step. But, you know, based on the research that we've seen come out within the last few months, it should be more like 10 to 12 feet. But part of what we do with public health is A, make a recommendation that's going to pursue health, but B, make a recommendation that is somewhat doable. And there's a line at which people are going to be able to do this long term. And that's what the balance that was struck with the 6 feet number. Even when that 6 feet number was initially settled upon, and we knew that it didn't take into account the full communicability of COVID. And at that time, we honestly didn't know exactly how communicable COVID could be. What we're learning now is that it's far more communicable than the flu, probably three times more communicable. And potentially the latest strains, the latest mutations that we've seen that have been detected in Colorado and California and the UK, potentially up to four, five, six times more communicable than the flu. So what you see is a virus that is just by virtue of its size, able to transmit itself much more effectively and have a smaller and smaller vehicles. The other reason, George, is because when we started with COVID response, we were in the tail ends of a typical flu season. We hadn't had a really large, horrible flu season in 2019-20. I remember talking about the flu season in January, February. We had seen a bimodal peak, meaning that we had a type B and a type A that had both already peaked. And so we were kind of on our downward slope. And then we saw this influenza-like activity in late February and early March that was just off the charts. We knew about COVID, but we didn't think it was in Lane County yet. And we didn't have a test to be able to identify it. And so we had initially sort of identified that as potential flu. We don't believe it was flu. We believe it was COVID. And flu had actually dropped off. And then COVID came on board. And then all the restrictions and stay-at-home orders came on board. So effectively what we did was we exterminated the flu. And we tried to exterminate COVID. And in large part, in Lane County, we almost did. We were looking at, you know, what, one or two, three cases a week there during the stay-at-home orders. So really, we were able to tamp down flu. And that happened across the nation. As flu has started to spring up, and we are seeing a few outbreaks of flu in Lane County and in various assisted living facilities. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow in my presser. It is starting to come back. But with those small actions of the distancing, the masking, and the way that that works with the numbers and the percentages of people who are actually remaining vigilant, it's going to cut down our flu numbers dramatically. And because it's a harder virus to transmit, you're going to see a very low flu numbers all the way through this flu season, most likely. And that's even with the contingent of people who are bucking the COVID order. Now, you're not going to see the same thing with COVID. COVID's going to spread very rapidly, even in people who are trying to do the right thing.
One last thing. Where are we at on vaccines countywide?
That is a fantastic question and something that I spent the majority of my day working on, George. Right now, we are a little over 4,000 individuals vaccinated. That is about half of where we want to be. I'm struggling to find words here because I really don't want to throw anybody under the bus. And I always think it's tacky to make excuses or blame anyone else. So what I will say is there have been challenges with coordination from the federal level to the state level, and then from the state level to the local public health level. We had a plan going into vaccine distribution that really drew from our experience doing H1N1 and doing meningitis. And we have a way of doing that to reach a large group of people very quickly and efficiently. The Oregon Health Authority has decided, and I want to argue this because I understand they have a lot of motivation for doing so, has decided to look at a prioritized model for distribution that is centered around trying to keep those who keep us healthy safe first, so they continue to keep us healthy, so our hospital groups and provider groups, and then looking at other priority groups going from there. So currently we are in what's called phase 1A, group one. And so that is our hospital groups, our EMS workers, and our long-term care facilities. The state worked directly with the hospital groups to provide vaccine to those hospital groups. So PeaceHealth got it and Mackenzie Willamette got it. Those are the two hospital groups in Lane County. And then our EMS, Eugene Springfield Fire, has been the focal point for OHA. They worked with Oregon Health Authority to receive the vaccine and have been working to distribute that to all Lane County first responders. And then Walgreens received a federal contract to distribute the vaccine to long-term care facilities.
All right, Jason, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and the information you gave us today. And of course, you know, we will continue to get the word out and try to encourage people to not be so fatigued in battling this pandemic.
Yes, absolutely, George. We appreciate it so much. And just so you know, public health gets it. We know that this has been long. This has been drawn out. There has been in every level of government and private enterprise along the way. I think we as a nation are learning together. And so we understand the fatigue. It's not like anybody's shaking a finger at anybody else. We've just got to get past it, and we've got to do what's right in order for us to get out of this pandemic and get back to a functioning economy and a functioning system. So thank you so much for your involvement and your participation in that. Hopefully I'll have more information soon. And as always, as soon as I get that, I'm going to make it available to you all.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, George, we'll be talking soon.
We'll continue the January edition of Our Town next hour right here on Coast Radio. Stay tuned. We got more great interviews coming up.